Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak to musical artist Jason Mraz. Jason Mraz is a singer-songwriter known for his upbeat folk pop sound and lyrical wordplay. He gained widespread recognition with his hit single, I'm Yours, which showcased his distinctive voice and laid-back style. Over his career, Mraz has received numerous awards and continues to inspire fans with his positive, feel-good music. His most recent album, Magical Mystical Radical Rhythmical Ride, is a return to pop music and inspired his participation in Dancing with the Stars, where he came in second place. He will be performing at the Falls View Casino Resort on July 13th. Tickets and more information are available at jasonmraz.com. In this episode, Jason and I talk about songwriting, the importance of presence, and how great it feels to dance like no one is watching. I hope you enjoy my interview with Jason. Thank you so much for speaking with me today. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. How are you?
I'm quite well. Thank you so much for chatting with me today. Yeah. I know that you're bringing your Mystical, Magical, Rhythmical, Radical Ride Tour to the Falls View Casino on July 13th in Niagara Falls, but also Western New York. Have you been to Niagara Falls or Buffalo or Western New York before?
Yes, many occasions. In fact, I've had the pleasure of playing Falls View several times, the casino there. It's wonderful access to the falls. It's always a cool crowd. You know, there's definitely a room full of locals and casino regulars, but, you know, the falls attract some of our fans to actually travel to see the falls for the first time. And it's a great, so it's kind of a fun destination venue for us, you know, for our fans included.
That's fantastic. You know, I have to tell you that we are based in Western New York and I'm teaching in a program. And I said to you, well, I'm working with some students and things like that. And I said, oh, I'm interviewing you this morning. And they were so excited. They said, oh my gosh, I'm seeing him this weekend. So they are going to make the destination and they are thrilled that you're coming to Western New York.
Cool.
Speaking of, I always like to sort of ask people about their early lives in my interviews. Do you remember the moment when you knew you could write music at a high level or that music would be a career for you?
Well, high level is an interesting part of that question. I started writing lyrics around eighth grade when I was in civics class. I probably should have been paying attention to my studies, but I was already working on verses and some raps that I could impress my friends with. So I was very interested, and I was singing even before then from a very, very young age. And so I always thought I would be in the entertainment industry in some capacity, whether I was singing in a band or in a musical or on a cruise ship. I really didn't know, you know, I knew that there was a lot of possibilities for performance. I was definitely pointed in that direction. And it wouldn't be until my college years where writing and instrumentation started to collide with my emotions and healing and or trying to figure out who I was in the world. And it felt very transformative and it felt personal and important. And interestingly, it also felt non-competitive. And I felt, you know, if I was to be in a musical or any other show, I would have to audition for that role. If I was creating original music, I wouldn't have to audition. I could just go out on a street corner and perform my own original music. And I could go to a coffee shop for my own original music. And so I felt it was a more interesting path. And writing at a high level would only come after years and years and years of practice to refine my thoughts and learn how to edit and learn how to craft a song.
Thank you so much. I use a very sort of colloquial phrase when I teach that you might get a kick out of, where I say students kind of showing their early work. Well, and this is a sort of terrible thing to say, but I will share it, is that now is the time for sort of ugly babies. That when we're first writing, it's like, it's really important that you sort of show it and kind of put it out to the world so that people can connect with it. But ultimately that baby will probably grow up to be a very sort of beautiful and attractive song once it gets a little bit older.
That's right. That's right. Wow. That's a beautiful way of putting it. And, you know, and I mean, we could go down the rabbit hole and talk about songwriting. It's my favorite topic.
You know, I'd love to ask, since we're on the topic of songwriting and you have been writing lyrics for so long, is there a singular lyric or a group of lyrics from one of your songs that you find always really connects with people? Maybe even one of the songs that you sing at your concerts?
Wow, gosh, I try to weave a few songs together in the show that almost sound like the same message over and over again. Like a song like Living in the Moment is very much affirmations and mantras that bring you back to the moment of the second verse. I'm letting myself off the hook for things I've done. I let my past go past and I'm having more fun. I'm living in the moment. And then another song in that early part of the set might be, be where your feet are. If you're lost, relax and be where your feet are. Also in the early part of the show is the remedy. I won't worry my life away. And so over and over again, I offer up these lyrics / mantras that remind us to be present. And I try to make the songs purposeful and I try to make the show purposeful. But as a songwriter, I'm not doing it because I'm trying to help others per se. I write these songs to remind myself to not worry and stress so much about the future and not dwell on mistakes of the past, but try to come back to the moment. And I write these also because when I am practicing music, you have to be in the moment. You can sing optimistically about the future and you can sing in ways that recognize and heal your past. But they all are occurring in the moment. And so my songs typically are written because I'm trying to experience the moment. And if it works, and if I can actually transform myself and heal myself and make myself happy in the moment that I'm playing music, then these songs about presence and about living in the moment always occur. So I feel like I often write the same song over and over and over again, because it's a reminder to me on how I can best live my life and enjoy my life.
Right. Sometimes teachers, I think, have to sort of, or they're always teaching the lesson that they need to learn the deepest.
That's it.
That's been my experience.
Beautifully said.
That is beautiful. Well, I'd love to ask sort of about some of those lyrics. You are such a prolific artist. You're so multifaceted. You've done so many things. I understand that your 8th and most recent studio album, Mystical, Magical, Rhythmical, Radical Ride, marks a return to pop music. What inspired that return?
Well, I mean, I guess I didn't really leave pop music, but I've always been a fan of dance music, electronic music, jam bands that can make you dance. And I had yet to really explore that on my records and in my show. And so it was something I'd been working on with my friends for about a decade. And it took us a decade to really learn how to play it and learn how to write it and refine it until we finally had the right batch of songs to go into the studio with to create this upbeat, danceable record. And the pop sort of focus came by suggestion from my mom, who had heard a huge batch of songs that I was working on for the record. She, you know, whenever the sort of mid-tempo acoustic songs came up, she's like, you know, I've heard that before. You've been doing that over and over. She goes, you should really aim for the pop stuff, like before it's too late. You know, she stressed that I was, you know, getting older and I should really enjoy my youth and put these dance songs out there. And I'm so glad we did, because that really was a focus. My mom as an inspiration and age as an inspiration, but also all the years we've been practicing getting this dance music together. It's like, it's now or never. Let's go for it.
That's fantastic. I love the wisdom of mom coming in. They're so important. Where did the title come from, Magical, Mystical, Rhythmical, Radical Ride?
It came from a lyric inside Disco Sun, which is a track on the album. And it was a lyric that I was never really certain about during the writing of that song. And it just kind of passed me by. And usually when I write, often it's stream of consciousness and I write almost chronologically. So I'm in the middle of that verse and that lyric shows up in that verse to kind of help me complete the phrase. But when I finished the album, I combed through the album, looking at the lyrics, wondering if the title of the album was in there already. And when I got to that line, it no longer was, it was more potent to me after the entire album was finished, that line. And I saw it as, you know, what I had intended it for in the song was that, you know, this is life. It's be mystified by it. You know, it's a magical experience. It's rhythmical. We're going to go round and round in its cyclical nature. And it's, you know, we're going to suffer, but we're also going to experience incredible joy. And to get through that, it's going to be a radical experience. It's going to change you constantly. And it's a ride, you know, we started and it's going to have an end. And so I saw it as like, this really sums up life. And that's kind of what I'm trying to express with this album, which is it's got its highs and its lows. It's a journey through time. And it's fun. It's 13 syllables. And why not use that subject line of your email or your title of your album to be something that catches you and takes you for, you know, a bit of a tongue twister.
Yeah, I was even thinking earlier as you were speaking about kind of presence, how so often too, you know, we have to go through this magical, mystical, rhythmical, radical ride of movement and dancing and getting there just to sort of be present kind of with where we are. And so I thought that beautifully tied in with what you were speaking about earlier. Yeah. I feel like Dancing is the lead single off the album. How did this song come to you?
About 10 years ago, we were on tour with many of the same band members that I'm currently with now. And we would do this bit in the show where it says, I like to dance and it looks like this. And we would do our dance move. And then the next band member over would say, I like to dance and it looks like this. And then do their dance move. And it was a really fun opportunity for personal expression and to remind each other we all dance differently. And it's okay. And I've tried to put that sentiment in songs past. But that bit of I like to dance and it looks like this never left my mind. And I knew that could someday become a song. And after many drafts, many iterations, we finally figured it out in the summer of 22 while on tour. So we went into the studio right after that tour and we put the song down. But it took many attempts and many drafts and many verses before I just started deleting things and omitting parts and simplifying to make it the best song it could be possible. And 10 years ago, I mean, obviously the drafts weren't ready, but also that bit of I like to dance and it looks like this, it wasn't fully realized because also, you know, TikTok hadn't yet emerged. And this idea of showcasing your personal dance, showcasing your personal expression, it was hard to imagine that inside of a song 10 years ago. Because it's a visual cue as well. But now I think 10 years later, we get it. You can get a visual cue inside of an invisible song. I like to say invisible because music is, you know, it's not always visible. It's invisible to us. We experience it around us.
I hadn't even really thought, it's so brilliant that you said that, of kind of connecting this with the idea of TikTok and how that kind of all merged together and it sort of came about at the sort of right time. I have to ask, at prior dates on the tour, have audiences been kind of bringing their A-game dance moves or dancing like no one's watching?
Yes, explosive. And we help the audience throughout the show to get there. You know, it's like, we don't expect you to just blow up and pop up like popcorn dancing immediately. Everyone needs to feel comfortable in their surroundings because I always like to say the concert is more about the audience than it is about us. The audience has to go through a lot to get to the gig, you know, get into the crowd, organize with their friends and family, all of that, parking, you know, travel, whatever it is. And then standing in a giant crowd of strangers and warming up to that space. But by the end of the night, it is explosive. Like last night, I could not believe how just much fun and intense this audience was having. So the goal is to try to just take people on a transformational journey from their head into their heart over 90 minutes. And I like to think of it as a yoga class even, that, you know, you might be uncomfortable at first, but we're going to breathe, we're going to get through it, we're going to sing. We're going to move our bodies slowly. And by the end of the night, you just can't wait to just let it all go and then take it onward into your life, the rest of your life, into the next day and into the weekend and into, you know, the rest of the year, to remember to just enjoy the ride and be as expressive as you can or as you want to be.
That's so beautiful. I understand this song also inspired you to compete in season 32 of Dancing with the Stars. You finished second place. Congratulations. What surprised you about that experience?
I think dance, you know, this is a good point. I was just talking about how music is invisible, but dance is actually almost like another dimension of music that I had not fully embraced, because I was always holding an instrument or I was hiding behind a microphone, and I would encourage others around me to dance. I would encourage the audience to dance, but I had personally not yet experienced it. So putting the instrument down and the microphone down and really learning how to tell a story through dance and feel the musicality of dance, because sometimes you're dancing to a lyric, sometimes you're dancing to the beat, sometimes you're dancing to a riff. And I loved it. It was bringing dance into like four dimensions or something. I was totally surprised by that and blown away by it. And I loved every second of it. And the show itself, even though it's, you know, they show it as a competition, it's not competitive at all. Everybody on that show is cheering each other on. We're helping each other, you know, holding and supporting each other in every step of the way. And nobody wants to see anybody voted off. It really was a family and group effort to make great TV and great dances every week. And I absolutely loved it. I was so surprised how much I loved it, as much as also I was nervous, terrified, and my body was just completely banged up.
Right.
I would have loved to had more days off and sleep in, but it was not that kind of experience. It was very grueling. It was like the Olympics of dance. It was so tough, but I absolutely loved it.
That's fantastic. Earlier this spring, I know you reunited with Emmy Award nominated singer, songwriter, and composer Ingrid Michaelson for the brand new single Love Is. What was it like revisiting this collaboration?
Oh, she's just so lovely. And anything she asks, I'm going to say yes, because I know she's committed to classic arrangements and just easy access, yummy music. And I like that. She makes it easy for me, and she's funny, and she's just going for it. So I love to be, I'm honored that I'm associated.
That's fantastic. And that song is now streaming on all platforms, so our listeners can get it. I have one final question for you. When people are driving out of the parking lot after seeing your show, what do you hope they're saying or talking about?
I hope they're driving out with compassion and for the other drivers and the other people in the parking lot, you know, saying, no, you go first. It's okay. You. And like, I hope there's a kindness and a gentleness that the audience is having, obviously for each other in getting out of the venue, but that's also a reflection on how gentle you're being with yourself, you know, not in a rush and full of gratitude, full of life, full of, you know, and that life being feeling of abundance, so that you have generosity to give and you have time to share. That's what I hope people are left with, is a sense of peace and gratitude.
Fantastic. What a beautiful way to end. Those are my questions, but I always like to end every interview I do by saying, is there anything that you feel was left unsaid today?
No, I'm glad we got to talk about so many different topics.
No, thank you very much for your generosity. It was really, really lovely talking to you. And I hope our listeners will be there in support of the upcoming show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day. Thank you so much.
That was my interview with Jason Mraz. He was so great to talk to and so kind and generous in the interview. I hope you will see him at the Falls View Casino Resort on July 13th. Tickets and more information are available at jasonmraz.com. This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Sarah Potter engineered this episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides posted bi-monthly on buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios.